true, that spiritual, actual, factual answers to questions he asking. You find them inside you, beside you, reciting the records of Kashuk. We laughing, we drafting the passion through fabric. It's time for that comedy, dramedy, all of the fanciest, catchiest acronyms. Listeners, listen, we traveling. Consciousness is always unraveling. The reading you're having is mapping you back to your natural habitat. Abracadabra, it's magic, let's pass it. To top it off, the host are the classiest. Now, what were you asking for? All of the answers, what? All the answers.
Well, hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Today's tardiness on my part was because of things that are relevant to the podcast that I'd like to actually talk about. But
great.
Do you have stuff?
I got nothing today. I was, you know, sometimes thinking about, all right, what are we going to talk about today?
Nothing.
Fuck all. I don't know. I don't have anything pressing. I'm sure I'll come up with something later, but I don't. I have no need to introduce a topic.
I have deep spiritual things.
Great.
Deep spiritual things.
So let's jump right in. What's going on?
Okay. One second. Okay. I was in the midst of a little healing process with myself that was like at the crux of itself. So stopping to be on time was going to be rough. So I was like, can you give me 15?
Yeah. It seems counterproductive too, to the whole thing.
Yeah. But what I want to say for the benefit of anyone who still listens to this, I'm like, do people still listen to this? First of all, I'm like, do we have listeners?
Or is it just the same five people?
Yeah. Like, I haven't checked with Desmond in a while on our actual numbers. Like, are you aware of them? Are there any humans that do this anymore?
I mean, I don't know that our downloads have like diminished or anything, but we'll have to ask him.
You don't know that they have?
I don't know that they have. And I think he would have said something maybe if suddenly there was like a significant drop off, but it might be.
I'm typing this right now. Hey, Des, do we still have any listeners?
What do our numbers look like?
Can you send most recent numbers? Okay, anyway, all of that comes from I am quite aware. I'm going to go kind of into deep teachings here. I'm just going to be a teacher for a minute. I'm going to shift into like channeling a bit. This may take a while, so you may tune in and tune out, Cass, but
jump right in, babe. Let's do it.
This is here for the saying. So on people's path of spiritual healing and integration and personal growth and emotional wellness, everyone has their own order of events in which things naturally flow, occur, and unfold, right? Like, we can only go at the pace and in the order that we're moved to go. That being said, where I am at this moment, I'm really strongly compelled to talk about, which is to say, sidebar before I say it, is that this system, I'm going to talk about the gene keys. The gene keys is so fucking mind-blowingly profound that it's similar to, but I think more of a case like human design, where in human design, they say human design operates inside people like a time bomb, like a little seed is planted and then the time bomb goes off when it goes off and you don't know when and you don't know why. And all of a sudden your interest is piqued and you're digging into it. And then years go by and then another time bomb goes off and you go, now I have to know more about human design. And then years go by and then you're like, now I have to know more, or minutes or hours, whatever your whole karmic path is taking you to in terms of your timing. Because there's no right, wrong, good, bad about timing. It's just your path.
And just for the listeners, for me, gene keys is like a branch off of, but it's based in. Yeah.
I'm about to get there. No. So in the same way that human design goes off in your system like a time bomb on its own timeline, which has everything to do with karma and the emotional, spiritual, psychic development your system is ready for when it's ready for it and not ready for when it's not ready for, all according to divine timing. And if you're to take on the idea of passenger consciousness, which is taught in many systems, but that's the language for it in human design, they teach the idea of decision watching as opposed to decision making. We often all feel pressured, like, how do I make these decisions? What decision should I make? And Human Design says, well, pay attention to strategy and authority and watch as the decision arises within you. Clarity arises within you. You make decisions. It's sort of like decisions get made and you are a vehicle through which they're happening if you can sit in passenger consciousness. So all that is context simply to say, similar to that, the gene keys process, which I'll talk about its relationship to human design in 1 second. Holy fuck is, oh my God. What's blowing my mind about it is how integrated of a system it is between body, emotions, spirit, mind, aura, energy. It's the most integrated system I've seen yet. Now, that being said, Jesus Christ, it's if you were to just, let's say you're like a person off the street and you're like, I think I'd like to develop spiritually or emotionally. Let me start with the gene keys. I might say, don't, or like, okay, good luck. That's not going to work. Or like, I wonder if that'll work because I never could have started with it. Like, I mean, in fact, what's so fascinating to me is I sort of did start with it, which is to say, long ago, somebody introduced me to the idea of it. And it was a seed that was weirdly planted in my reality before human design was. And I read 2 sentences of the first gene key of like my first gate, my first line, and 1 gene key of 15 or whatever it is, and was like so shaken to the core by how like threatening it was to my sense of self.
This is 15 years ago or whatever.
Yeah, I don't even know when anymore, but that I was like, cool, cool, cool. Slammed it shut, walked away, and was like, not today. Like actively, no, you know?
Yeah.
So years go by, all the healing schools, all the shit, whatever. And then human design, oh my God, time bomb, teaching it, doing it here, da 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 da. I don't know, 4 months ago, for whatever time bomb, karma, timing reasons, everything in me said, I have to know the gene keys and I have to know them now. And I was like, okay. Meanwhile, I have all the books. I bought them 50 years ago. They've been sitting around going like, are you going to read us today? So they're all here. So I dive in. I'm not making this up. When I decided to start looking at my books, I got an email that said like, hey, the Pearl sequence is starting tomorrow, which is like one of the 3 sequences inside the Gene Keys teachings. And Richard Rudd, the inventor, channeler, head guy of Gene Keys, which I'll say more about its relationship to human design in 1 second, is teaching himself and you get to be on these calls with him. And I was like, yes, it was like the second I looked at it, it showed up in my email inbox. I haven't gotten any promotional materials from them ever before. And I was like, okay, so yes. And then I start going. And then I, on day one of doing the first meditation they do with you, they give you this practice that I've been doing ever since then. I've been doing it every day. It's just a contemplative meditative practice, sort of like step one for something called the Pearl sequence. Okay, I won't get us into the weeds of it just yet. But what I will say is that, oh God, let me just listen to how to talk about this. So taking the pin out of, so what is the relationship between it and human design? Richard Rudd was an avid human design student himself and teacher of human design for a long, long time. I'm 90% sure he taught, and psychically that's a big yes. So he was deep in it and one of sort of foundational in its development in the world and getting out and stuff. But he had all along, the story goes, he had, and this is just like a guy who's alive now. He's a guy, really cool guy. I like him. Anyway, he had issues with human design because human design is so, so all about the mundane. Human design's teachings are like, this is who, what the body mind vehicle of you is here to do in this reality. And you shouldn't try to transcend it. You should just be it. And in the being of it, your life will take you to whatever transcendence is required for you. But transcendence is like very much not the point of human design. Human design is saying, be in the 3D now, be there, and be your type and be your channels. And that takes the vehicle of your body through everything you need to know in this life. And if spirituality arises also, good for you or good not for you or whatever. Because human design's perspective is like, oh my God, and there's the 305. Okay. Oh my God. Okay. Human, that's one of my numbers. We've talked about it. I'll say more about that in a minute. Human design says, you know, one of the big deconditioning elements in human design is like people think spirituality is always 100% necessarily the way. Like people who get into spirituality are like, this is the way, capital T, capital W, right? Because it feels good. It feels really good to connect with God. That feels good.
Yeah.
But if what you're looking for is fulfillment as a generator or success as a projector or whatever, like theoretically, if you want to live into the purpose of your life, your physical life that you embodied into, human design would say, like, don't worry so much about trying to transcend beyond this body. Those are the old spiritual teachings from like the old systems of conscious teachings from the Tibetans and the Buddhists and the whole past way of doing spirituality. Human design says we've evolved as a collective to where it's now about including the vehicle, the body, in awakening. And awakening is like being awake in a body. Because once the human race can actually be awake in a body, then the human race can actually go to what the human race as a collective is meant to go to next. But it can't do that until it's included the body because it has a body.
Right.
But the old spirituality teachings across every tradition all said, like, we are not of our body. It's beyond the body. Go leave through the third eye. Go through your crown. God is past the body. The body's where all the problems are. The nature of desire is all the problems. Desire creates suffering. All that. Okay. So there's Richard Rudd, a student of all these teachings and a teacher of it. And a kind of like a high level dude of these practices. But the whole time he's feeling at conflict about this core difference that he perceives between some of the core human design stuff and what he's seeing about reality through his own perception, right? But he's going through all the normal stuff you go through when you're in a huge internationally accepted system that millions of people follow, which is who the fuck am I to be like, yeah, but I'm going to say more new things and be right. Like, nope, you know, so all of he goes through his own process with it and has years of processing and whatever. He also is a deeply spiritual guy and he's channeling his own information and getting his own insights. And so what he comes to in his own process is that in terms of the human design information that is relevant, it's essentially the incarnation cross and the profile. Which I've spoken briefly about here on the podcast that I have said in the past, some people believe, I always say it like that because I don't want to get into the whole story, except today we're getting into the whole story.
Right.
Some people believe that all that matters is the incarnation cross and the profile. I was alluding to this Richard Rudd thing, which I now have more intel on and more insight about. So it's I feel like I can talk about it now. So yeah, there's a lot of deep specifics we could get into by saying that. But through his study, he realized all of the gates and channels and all of the everything doesn't matter. What matters is incarnation cross and profile and just contemplatively trying to do the thing that is most true to you. But to help you get there, here's this new system I've channeled that is based in all the gene keys have a gate and a line.
Right.
And it's from the human design system of gates and lines, right? So you're first gene key would be like 34.6, you know, the 34th gene key and the sixth line. So it is built from the sort of foundation of human design, but it's like this one guy's next level expansion of that and imagining of whatever. Part of why...
Is he basing this idea of key on like gate, unlocking your gate? Is that... Am I being too literal?
I mean, I don't know, but that does read when you say that.
Yeah.
That seems right. I get a yes on it. I don't know that factually, but that reads psychically. Okay. So yeah, I think that's a good insight. So for a while, I had my own resistance to going deeper into the gene keys in the most recent years of my life because I've thought, you know, he's just one guy. I had all the same judgments, I'm sure, he went through. Like, who the fuck is this guy? This system is blowing my mind. Like, he's just some clown who had to make his own, you know, he's probably a guru and a narcissist and, you know, whatever stories I wrote. But like I said, the time bomb went off and everything in my body, like in my guts, was like, what does that book say? Open it now. And I was like, okay. So I just got into it. All right. So then I get into... There are three sequences, they're called, in the gene keys. The activation sequence, the Venus sequence, and the pearl sequence. Activation is sort of about 3D body. Venus sequence is about the heart. And it's not 3D body. That's not the right way to say activation sequence. It's sort of about baseline foundations. I don't know how else to say it right now. Venus sequence is about the heart, and then pearl sequence is about work not abundance, but starts with a P. What's the word?
Prosperity.
Prosperity and prosperity, essentially. So he talks about how you can enter the gene keys through any of the three, even though the pearl sequence is supposed to be the last one. He's like, the more we've all studied this thing that happened, it happened to come through my body, but I'm learning it as it's coming through and I'm always learning from it. He goes, you know, it's multidimensional and cyclical and every up and down direction. So you can enter it anywhere. And all of it starts to holographically function. So if you activate your pearl sequence, it's going to work on you on the Venus level and on the activation level, even if you're going, quote, quote, out of order, if that makes any sense.
Okay.
So I entered on the third one because it's the one that pulled me in. I'm always interested in right work, you know, like spirituality as connected to work. Because I have this left angle cross of industry. So I'm like a person that likes to work, industry, be industrious, go, do. Okay. And that's correct for my design. But I'm also this spiritual person who's like, I'm confused, human design, about how you're not integrating spirituality into these conversations, except little tiny nuggets here and there with specific people that have like this specific gate in their whatever and this specific channel in their whatever. And I'm a six line, which, you know what, I believe Richard Rudd to be. And now I have to know, now that we're sitting here, give me one second. Richard Rudd profile. Let's see if it comes up. What is Richard Rudd's jinky profile? Come on now. It's a video. I'm like, no, just tell me. Is he a 6'2"? Hold on. Is Richard Rudd a 6'2"? The reason I ask is because six line people, he seems very six liney to me, but I could very much be wrong, of course. 4'6". Okay. Okay, good. So he does have a six line. Okay. Oh, interesting. Okay. 4'6". Okay. And then I have to know one more thing, and then I'm going to have a lot of words to say. Grand. Okay. So if it is true that he's a 4'6", okay. The only reason I had to know that is because everything about the way he talks about things is very six liney. Six lines are always looking for like, what is beyond what we know now? And what is the next expansional? What's the next way to expand into something bigger? What else is there? You know? And so if you're him and you study human design for 30 years, at some point you're going to be like, and you're a six line, it's in his body. Everything in him is looking for, and then what, you know? So it kind of makes sense that he would be, and with his fourth line personality, he's going to be very good with his community, his tribe, his team. He's going to be very much serving the community, right? In that fourth line personality, which as a six line personality, I don't have that. I'm like the Uber. 6'2"s are just like on the hill, being a weirdo, and God willing, being a role model of being ourselves. Just in the like, if it's working, we're being ourselves, and it's somehow role model-y, and maybe the community's aware of it, maybe not, because we're fucking weird. But 4'6" would be someone whose whole personality is all geared towards helping the community, so that when he needs them, they help him. So that's fourth lines are like community, everything community. And six lines are like weirdo eccentrics who see beyond. So if you have those two together, you have a Richard Rudd.
Got it.
Okay. So what I'm trying to get to here is what's blowing my mind about it, just for the sake of any listeners that might benefit from thinking about getting into it or not or whatever, is the contemplative meditative practice at the heart of it. There's this, I won't get into the mechanics of it, but is treating my physical nervous system, spine, body, heart. It's so physical what it's treating, but spiritual at the same time. It's like physical, physio-spiritual. It's trippy. And I think that part of that is because for me, as I've talked on here many times about, I had to go spirit, emotions, body. That's been the order of my learning journey, is like, because I was too traumatized, frankly, to go the other way. Most people really go the other way, or they go body, emotions, body, emotions, body, emotions, body, emotions, spirit.
Right.
Or they go body, 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 emotions, spirit. Or they go body, spirit. But I had to go the other way because the amount of trauma I was carrying. And it's also oftentimes, I learned this later, healers often, and not as opposed to therapists, often have this order of events, spirit, emotions, body, because if you're going to become a healer involving conscious energy and divine light, you're usually becoming one because you need spirit so bad,
right,
that it has to come first for your system to be safe to go near the physical. Because what happened on the physical was so fucked. That's what you need. Okay. Right.
The trauma happened in a physical way most of the time. And so
it's way too threatening and too destabilizing to go physical first.
Gotcha.
You know, for someone with certain kinds of trauma. Okay. So I have been saying, when I started working with Lisa Koenig, who I, you know, talk about here, and she and I now have the two-person sessions, and you've been to one and Rami's been to them. I was like, oh, it's like been very clear in the last bunch of months for me that everything is the body now, the body, the body, the body. For me on my little, I'm just one lady, right, on this journey. So of course I'm open to the gene keys now, because the gene keys was always going to hit me. Like when it's working on my heart, it's working on the nerves in my heart, as well as the spirit, the spiritual heart,
uh-huh,
and the emotional heart. But because I've dug these pathways through spirit and emotion into the, now we can do physical heart. Anyway, so it all is like very magically, perfectly lining up. And it's, I'm doing it when I'm 47, which is 3 years before 50. And 50 is when I come off the roof as a 6'2". I'm just like every day right now, a little like, mind blown. Like, wow. Like there's just these acid trip things that are happening, but they're happening now in just the mundane. Like when, like a few minutes ago when I said, and there's the 305.
Yeah.
So on my garage band, which is recording this, you know, it numbers track by, it's every, I want to say paragraph, but whatever the audio equivalent to, like every inch on the track that's being recorded is labeled with a number.
Uh-huh.
And I haven't been looking at that at all. And then as I was saying whatever the fuck I was saying, I happened to look and the number right there was 305, which I've talked on here before, is the, there's two numbers that show up all the time for me, the 218 and the 305. And the 305 is always a reflection of, like 305 is Miami, it's my childhood, it's everything I've been healing from. And I just get it all the time now. I'm still in the deep inquiry of what the fuck the like nuances of that are about, which I would like to say more about in a minute. But anyway, so like stuff like that, just a lot. The mundane is, it's starting to happen more and more where it's like, I had a friend who used to say, we were both like deeply into the spiritual. She said, I trust God innately, inherently, flawlessly, committedly, but I don't trust life at all. And I felt the same. I was like, oh, that nailed how I feel. I fully trust the big cosmic forces and the divine light and the conscious unfolding. But if you ask me like, does life have my back? I would have said, fuck no. Life is an asshole that you have to like heal from.
Yeah.
So now I'm starting to have a different experience. I'm starting to feel like I'm starting to watch as my physical body is getting treated more and more, AKA the physical is really starting to line up with the spirit and the emotion more and more, heal, heal, heal. I'm like watching life have my back. It's tripping me out because I'm like, I'm not used to the physical objects like nature and trees and signs and on the street and the dog. Like I'm not used to the physical landscape being so deeply integrated into my sense of magical interconnectedness. And I would imagine that someone, when you have nurturing, loving parents, which is why I think most people go physical, emotional, spiritual, or physical, emotional for the majority of their life, and then maybe some spirit if you feel like it, is because if being in a body is a safe thing to be for you your whole life, then you, why would you not trust the realm of the physical? It's a safe place to be.
Yeah.
It has your back. It's always had your back.
Yeah.
Earth is lovely and it nurtures you. And you
so when you say life has your back, you are, when you say life, I'm just for clarification, you're talking about like the 3D world is is what you mean by life.
Yeah, like, yeah, let me elaborate. That's a great question. Like, people that you know, houses that you live in, the physical ground of the earth, the air, the wind, the weather, physical 3D object-based reality.
Yeah.
You know, hugging from a mother figure.
Right.
Rain, sun, beaches.
And when you say it has your back, are you saying, go out on a limb, are you saying you feel safer suddenly?
Me personally?
You personally.
Well, yeah, that's my whole point is that, like, this is what I'm getting to, is that you guys who had, like, safety in childhood, right?
Yeah.
You, there's a way that you know so inherently the thing I'm about to say that you don't even know that you know it because exactly. You take it it's for
the,
granted.
It's the ocean you swim in.
Yeah, it's obvious, right? Which is, it's safe to exist.
Yeah.
Life has your back.
Yeah, there's a male, there's a white, there's a lot going into that, and there's well-parented.
Yeah.
With less trauma. Like that, there's a long list that, yeah, I agree. I basically think that life, that it is safe for me to exist in the world.
Now, let me ask you this. You think it's safe to exist. Do you have a sense of like, yeah, I mean, I'm going to be okay. I'm going to be taken care of, basically.
Most of the time. Yeah. No, I'll future trip or panic or whatever.
Yeah.
But then I'll get over that.
Yeah.
But I think that's a more complex sort of interweaving also of different aspects of personality and design.
Yeah,
and,
I think you're
and
right.
And spiritual path and all that
development.
Shit.
Yeah, development. You're
that's
totally right.
Slightly more complicated, but on the basic level of like,
I guess.
Yeah. I mean, it seems so obvious to say what you're saying now of like, of course, if the world has not been safe, especially when you were developing, then the world is not safe.
That's right.
If the world has been safe,
right,
then the world is safe.
Right. That's my point.
Seems like a big duh, but also needs to be said.
Well, okay. But to be fair, it needs to be said for me. I don't know if it needs to be said for anyone else, but it needs to be said for me. And I think in the saying of it, people can glean their own, whatever they're going to glean from it. Because the point I'm making is, imagine going through your whole life and feeling like your own body and the physical landscape around you is trying to kill you.
Yeah.
That's how I've lived until today.
Yeah. Jesus. I mean, that's, yeah.
Like I'm overstating it a little to make a point, but like, I mean, also really, in other words, my adult mind has developed past the fear child nervous system part of me that believes I'm under constant threat.
Yeah.
But there is a physical part of my nervous system that believes we're under constant threat, that in fact knows we're under constant threat. Because when it was under constant threat while being formed, it froze in that energy and that
right.
belief
yeah.
out of to survive. Because what the nervous system does and the psyche is it builds a casing, you could say, around trauma and terror when the baby is too young.
Yeah.
So that fear is living in there. Alive and well, certain we're under threat at all times. And this is how you get an eight.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Eights are annihilated at a very young age. Annihilated. So much so that there's so much casing around a central trauma that you live life on the offensive because you're like, who else is trying to annihilate me?
What's occurring to me is the sort of, there's levels of this that are individual, there's levels of this that are cultural, like it, all the things that are spinning through my head are like, yeah, like Black people in America in general, like women existing in certain spaces, like, but those are more cultural and generalized, also have this effect.
Yeah.
But then on the individual level, even within those groups or within, you know, I could have a similar thing, but it would be different because it would be individual based on my individual traumas. But then there are cultural traumas that also
yes.
create that same, or maybe not the same, maybe a different, but a variation of this story. I don't know what to do with that, but it just is an interesting variation on
what you're saying. It's simple. It's the same exact thing. It's just mine was caused by a human man raped a baby.
Yeah.
Black women's whatever is caused by whatever their individual trauma was as a kid, plus just being Black women
yeah.
in the world. That you're right. But you're just speaking to what was the cause of the thing.
Right.
The impact is the same.
Yeah. I mean,
it's a different version, and black people have it harder. But the impact still creates
it creates the thing.
When I say the impact is the same, I'm not talking about white people have the same hardship that black people have. This is not a race conversation. But if we're bringing race in, I would say the trauma of being a black or brown person in a white world, which is what we fucking still weirdly live in, is so real that it creates similar nervous system. I'm describing aspects of what trauma held in the nervous system is like.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, on that level. I don't think there's a...
Just try being a black person. You know what I think would be the most like healing thing that everyone on earth could go through is if all people that are not brown or black have gone from a life of being white, and then you got to be black for a week, and then you go back.
Right. And if you have a penis and balls and are presenting that way, you got to go live as someone who seems like they don't have a penis and a balls for a month, you know? And if you're...
Yeah. That would create all the empathy we need.
Jesus
Christ. That would be like white people so finally could ridiculous. Understand. Well, I don't know if it's ridiculous. I think it's what's occurring.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's been this debate. This huge, it's an old concept, but it suddenly blew up on the internet recently about bear or man. Do you know about what I'm about to say? They asked a bunch of women, you're in the woods.
Oh.
You hear a noise behind you. You turn around. Would you rather it be a strange man or a strange bear?
Bear, and 100%.
100% bear. And that seems so obvious to me. And everybody's like, yeah, duh. What's crazy is not, I mean, obviously people can, well, actually bears kill, no, fuck you. Go fuck yourself. What you're not seeing is that we didn't ask you what was the right answer. We asked you what your answer was.
Right.
And your answer is bear. So fucking listen.
Right.
Right. Point being, like, it kind of doesn't matter whether you're right or wrong to feel that way.
You mean if technically more humans are killed by bears than by men?
Which is not true. More women are killed by men than are killed by bears.
So then what is the point?
People try and find all kinds of... Well, men are also attacked by women sometimes.
Fuck
off. Fuck all those fucking fucks. Point being, it goes back to what you're saying.
Uh-huh.
It's like regardless of the source of the response exists.
Yeah.
And right now, you are in this state where you had this... early trauma that told you 100% that you are not safe in this world.
And it's still in there. I'm still working on it.
And no matter how many times you know now in your head that you are safer than you were then, we'll just put it that way.
And I feel most of me, 80% of me is like, we're totally safe.
But it's still there because
what
was formed. I mean, it's the same as like why neuroplasticity and neurofeedback works, things like that. Because we form shapes in our brainwaves, in our hearts, in our souls, in our spiritual third eye, all the shit. We form these shapes to protect us. And
well, also we're holding physical trauma. It's not even a shape to protect. It's like there's still literal fear vibes in my little spine that I'm day by day peeling out. And right now using the Gene Keys contemplative process to peel out.
I just remembered the other day I was on a long walk and I put in the album that I hadn't thought about in years by Sleep No More. Did I tell you this already?
Maybe.
So Sleep No More was Sleep No More, Asleep
podcast?
At Last, Sleeping at Last,
uh-huh.
which is the podcast where the guy wrote a song for every type.
Yeah.
And I hadn't thought about that in 3 or 4 years.
This
is another moment of also of synchronicity.
Very cool.
And just the other day I was like, I'm going to listen to that while I go on this. I was just going on a walk for myself, a little walk and meditation.
Uh-huh.
And I put it on and I listened to each one. And what's funny is like the three, it was nice. That was a nice song. But certain songs, and I had certain people in mind while I heard them.
Yeah.
I was bawling, just crying my damn eyes out.
Yeah.
The synchronicity part is I left a message for Rami and then they messaged me back and they were like, yeah, I just listened to that 2 weeks ago.
Wow.
After 3 years of not listening to it.
What a trip.
You know, and they just reintroduced themselves to it and was sharing the songs with people.
Right.
Listening to the 8, thought about you, lost my fucking shit.
Aw.
Yeah, it was.
That's so sweet.
Because one of the lines was, and the reason it's relevant to what you're saying here is,
yeah,
I'll start crying when I say it, was something like, when I was so young and I put this armor on, I don't remember what the result of that was, but just that very simple statement of, I was so young and I had to put this armor on, and that's you. And I was like, fuck, just blah. Because we've talked about it so many times in this podcast. Like that, and like you just said, that's how you make an eight.
Yeah.
That's how you fucking make an eight.
Yeah.
God damn
it. Yeah.
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 That's all. I could say more about that. Like listening to the four and thinking about my best friend, Jeff, and just going like, God damn it.
Yeah.
It even had a line about blurry photographs. Maybe the truth is in this blurry photograph. And I was like, that's his art. Literally his first big art show recently. After 50 years, was fucking blurry photographs.
Wow.
Get the fuck out of here with that shit. The one about my dad, the five, I was like, get out of here with that shit.
Tell me, what did it say about the five?
The five was more beautiful. It's actually more lyrical, not so much about the pain. It was just about, like, maybe I will find, it's about, like, the cosmic truth.
Mm.
I'm in search of it, and maybe I can find it here. And it's so beautiful out there. There is a truth to be found in the beautiful cosmos.
Because
that's, you know, when we've had Dad on here, that's what he ultimately, that's his whole book is about, like finding, returning to those peak experiences where he lost himself into the all that is.
Right.
And that's what he's searching for. That's what he's been searching for ever since.
Wow.
And that's what the song said. I was like, God damn it. He nailed it.
Wow.
So,
what about the nine? Do you remember about the nine?
I can't remember. You know what? I think I stopped listening because I got home.
Yeah.
and I was just partway into the nine and I realized I'd lost my focus. I was like, I don't want to listen to this when I'm not focusing.
Yeah.
So I actually don't remember the nine. I'm going to go back and listen to it anyway. Yeah.
Yeah. I think I need to, because you're the second person in 2 weeks that's mentioned it to me.
Was it Rami? Yeah.
No.
Get the fuck out of here.
I won't.
Leave.
I'm staying right here. This is where I'm staying. Yeah, no, I know, right? Let me try to think of who the fuck that was. Somebody said to me,
that's crazy.
You ever heard Sleeping at Last? And I was like, yeah, I used to teach a class and make part of the homework was you had to listen to your type on Sleeping at Last.
Ugh.
Because I thought so I was obsessed with it for a long time. And then I just wasn't anymore. And now here it is again.
Super into the book. And like I read the Spiritual Enneagram. And yeah.
Yeah. What's his name? Chris Hewerts.
Chris Hewerts.
Yeah. That guy's an eight.
Yeah.
He helped me a lot listening to how Chris Hewerts writes and speaks about the eight and understanding. He helped me a lot, particularly when I was like actively looking at which anger is righteous anger, like, and is correct and is not something you have to make yourself wrong for having.
Yeah.
And you know, trying to understand what is the value of anger. There's a book I like called The Dance of Anger. And this author talks about, like, people think it's about getting rid of anger. It's not. It's about working with anger and understanding what anger is trying to communicate. So anger is a gift because it's showing you where your boundaries are, but where they're not being allowed to be. And it's anyway, so that was very helpful for me. But all his words about eightness have always been so, so illuminating for me.
Yeah. That was the podcast that finally got me to understand the six. I really didn't get the six until I listened to the six episode.
Oh, I should listen.
And it just listening to the song, I made me wonder if my brother's a six.
Huh.
Not usually I was working it in the reverse where I'd listen to the song going, oh, I got someone in mind. Whereas this one, I was listening to the song and I started to go, I wonder if my brother's a six.
Yeah. Yeah. That's anyway. Interesting.
Yeah.
I there's a lot to say there. I always find that there's the, there's a site that I started to teach from that breaks a lot of details and specifics of each type down really clearly that we should link here. I'll send it to you or Desmond or both of you so we can put it in the show notes because
okay,
I found that this particular, each number gets a full page of, in fact, here, let me pull it up because I want to say the words that I'm talking about. There are some specifics about each type that when broken down in the way that this particular site or page or person does, I find it, most people really finally figure out their type once they go through the, it's, yeah.
It just hones it down to a
yeah
more graspable space.
It has, here, I'll show you one second. There's a few words that I think would be useful for us to hear. Let me just open this and get to it. Go ahead.
I was going to say, tell us the name of the website and I can say it at least.
Yeah, I'm trying to get, I want to open the right. No, that's not it. We had an episode called There Will Be Peens.
Oh, we did. No question.
Just remembered that. Here we go. EnneagramUserGuide.com.
Huh. Never heard of that one. That's great.
I know.
So EnneagramUserGuide.com. That seems very easy to.
And now here's what matters though. When you get to it, you want to go to, there's a specific place inside of that. It's like EnneagramUserGuide.com/Enneagram-guide/Enneagram-type-4. Like it's a segment inside of that that has this one page for each type. And I'll give you the words I mean, and this will make more sense. This is just like one little section of one little site that says it gives you the fixation and the trap. It gives you the holy idea. It gives you the passion and it gives you the virtue. And I find that if people are like, I had a client the other day who was like really struggling between, am I a 6 or am I a 9? And I was like, let's look at your fixation, trap, holy idea, passion, and virtue, and you tell me. So let's do the 4. I'll read some of these from the 4. It's not a lot of information, just to make this point. The fixation of the 4 is melancholy, and it comes from a dissatisfaction with what is and a longing for what once was or could have been. The trap is authenticity. It comes from finding a sense of self and significance that expresses your unique gifts and individuality. But then watch this. They give one sentence that puts those two together. The fixation of melancholy points to the mental preoccupation of the type 4 ego. The trap of authenticity keeps an individual stuck in the fixation of melancholy. So the trap of every type keeps you stuck in your fixation.
Gotcha.
Okay. Then we go to the holy idea. So the holy idea of the type 4 is holy originality. Are you with me still on this?
Yes, I had to find it. It's like 2/3 of the way down the page for the 4, this section you're talking about.
Mm-hmm. It's 2/3 of the way down the page for all of them.
Yeah.
Holy originality is the holy idea of the 4. Involves accepting the common and ordinary in life instead of disdaining it in favor of the unique and special. The fixation of melancholy and the trap of authenticity keep an individual stuck in the type 4 fixation. The way out of that fixation is through holy originality. And what is holy originality? Accepting the common and the ordinary rather than disdaining it. But isn't that cool how it shows you like each piece and how they stick you in each other piece?
Right.
Then you get to the passion. Envy is a one-sided comparison between the positive of others and the negatives of oneself. The passion of envy is the emotional energy that serves the fixation of melancholy and the trap of authenticity.
Wow.
Lastly, we have the virtue, and this is the key to all of it. The type 4 virtue, equanimity. Equanimity appears when you also see the positives you have to offer instead of just the negatives when comparing yourself to others. The virtue of equanimity is what appears when the passion of envy subsides. Now, this is where the spirituality of the Enneagram becomes relevant. In other words, what I know is you can't get from envy to equanimity without a spiritual insight. Yeah. Without something beyond the ego and the mind.
Yeah. You can't just will it into existence.
Not really. And then let's just look at yours for fun, the 3.
Okay.
Fixation. Vanity comes from gaining a sense of value through accomplishments and subsequent recognition. The trap, efficiency, comes from pursuing the most effective path forward toward achieving your set goal. The fixation of vanity points to the mental preoccupation of the type 3 ego. The trap of efficiency keeps an individual stuck in the fixation of vanity. Wow, that's so accurate.
Oh, God.
The holy idea, holy hope, is finding intrinsic value in just being rather than needing affirmation and validation through your accomplishments. The fixation of vanity and the trap of efficiency keep an individual stuck in the type three fixation. The way out of the fixation is through holy hope, meaning there is knowing fully that there is intrinsic value in just being.
Yeah.
That's some deep shit.
But I have to demonstrate that.
Type three passion. Deceit involves taking on a persona that appeals to an intended audience, aka acting. I have difficulty knowing who I am separate from the image I'm presenting.
Yep.
The passion of deceit is the emotional energy that serves the fixation of vanity and the trap of efficiency.
Passion of deceit.
And deceit meaning taking on a persona that appeals to an intended audience.
And it serves that fixation of vanity and that trap of efficiency. Gotcha.
And then we have the virtue, which is the way out. Truthfulness appears when you find a sense of self that is true to who you are, instead of playing to the expectations of an intended audience. The virtue of truthfulness is what appears when the passion of deceit subsides.
Yeah. Yep. 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 Yeah. It's funny how often people who care about me and like are interested in my spiritual growth have uttered, without using this as a reference, that phrase of you have intrinsic value just in being who you are, like to me individually. And it always sounds generic to me, like, oh, everybody, but like they're saying probably something else to somebody else. But so many people have said those words to me. You've said those words to me.
Yeah.
Carolina has said those words to me. Denise has said those words to me. You know, like,
yeah.
Rami has said those words. People in the interest of, so it's interesting, like the wisdom is channeled even without reading this.
Right.
So.
Because it reads off of you that you don't know that.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I hear you.
This is great. Thank you. I've never seen this website before.
Isn't that great?
It's so just like shaved down to the like, here's what's really at the core of it all. Here's the.
Yes.
Here's exactly. The basics.
Let me read the eight just
yeah,
so
let's
that we're
read the eight because we've been talking about it. That's what started us on this whole conversation.
Well, and if we're going to make you be exposed, we may as well make me be exposed.
Might as well show your ass too.
So if the fixation of the eight is vengeance, it comes from balancing the scales of justice when others attempt to take unfair advantage. The trap, justice, pushes to reveal hidden truths that you imagine others to be hiding beneath the surface.
Oof.
The fixation of vengeance points to the mental preoccupation of the type 8 ego. The trap of justice keeps an individual stuck in the fixation. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. Holy idea. Holy truth. Holy truth is knowing that each person has their own truth to live by, and often it won't be the same truth that seems so obvious to you. The fixation of vengeance and the trap of justice keep an individual stuck in the type 8 fixation. The way out of that fixation is through holy truth, which, by the way, is one of the great, great teachings that Eric, my boyfriend, offers me. He lives in that energy where he just knows that each person has their own truth to live by and he has no judgment.
Uh-huh.
I'm always being like, can you believe this bitch and this shit she fucking said and what the fuck? And he's like, well, I mean, if you think about it from her perspective, and I'm like, no! I don't want to think about her perspective. I want to reveal her dark secret things in an effort
to be wrong.
Justice. No, it's like I don't even want her to be wrong. I want the truth to be revealed.
Right.
Which, there you go.
Which is a very admirable thing in general. But if it's your fixation, then it means you're blinding yourself to all the other parts.
That's
pieces.
It. And it keeps me wanting to be cranky about it, aka have vengeance, right?
So in a sense, it's like I as a three would be probably well served playing in those waters that you play in, the vengeance and justice. Maybe. I don't know. Because it's not a distraction from my, like, you need me to go do that for you so that you can be busy doing the other things. I wonder. I don't know. I'm postulating. Do you see what I'm saying?
You're saying that some of the qualities of the eight, like if I'm in pursuit of justice by revealing hidden truths, that would maybe benefit someone whose defensive strategy would be to avoid truth.
Right. So, well, yes, and that is actually not what I was saying, but that's actually the other side of it. It's like it doesn't serve you, but it might serve the world for you to do that. But what I was saying is maybe some of the others of us need to take that burden from you because it's like I'm using judgy words, but it would be better or be okay for me to go ahead and fuck around with vengeance and justice.
I don't know about that.
Because it wouldn't be a sort of a distraction from my own holy idea to do so.
Oh, I see. Because your holy idea is what again?
Is is off. No, not. It's also truth. Being honest. What was it? I have to look at it again. But not lying. Maybe it was honesty or authenticity.
No, hold on.
Now I have to look again. Shit.
It's okay. We have time. There's no rush. You're valuable just as you are. Okay. It's holy hope. Finding intrinsic value in just being rather than needing affirmation or validation through your efficiency and or vanity.
No, I meant the virtue.
Your virtue is truthfulness. Appears when you find a sense of self that is true to who you are instead of playing to the expectations of an intended audience.
Yeah, so even in that, I was probably trying to cast myself in the role of service knight to your vengeance need.
Okay, I'm going to keep reading this.
Go then, back to you.
Great. Holy idea for the eight, holy truth, knowing that each person has their own truth to live by and often it won't be the same truth that seems obvious to you, which is what I love about human design. It helps me remember that holy idea.
Yeah.
It shows me like, wow, look at these different charts. Fixation of vengeance and the trap of justice keep me stuck in my fixation. The way out of the fixation is through holy truth. Passion. My passion is excess. Excess of expansive energy that needs to be released through activity and expression. This energy feels natural for me, but I may have to sit on it when others find it too much. The passion of excess is the emotional energy that serves the fixation of vengeance and the trap of justice. God, that's real. The virtue is innocence. It appears when you allow yourself to experience tenderness and vulnerability instead of habitually pushing out against the world. The virtue of innocence is what appears when the passion of excess subsides. That's real. I love all this. I love that, like, I'm not mad at these things anymore. I'm like, yeah, that's how I learned to grow. I looked at this and I went, wow, I am caught in all of that. And then I went, I don't want to be. I want the passion of excess to subside. And, you know, it's funny. We're looking at this today because I was looking at this yesterday. I was talking to Eric about some fucking whatever I was feeling like venting about it. Chris Huertz talks about the eight often has a need to vent.
Right.
That they're not attached to. We're not like, if I go like, fucking Chrissy said this thing and God damn it. And then I felt like this. I'm not saying, therefore, Chrissy is bad and shouldn't have said it and fuck right. Chrissy till she's dead.
And you have to hate Chrissy because I told you that.
None of that. It's more like I need to get this excess energy out of me.
Yeah.
Because I'm holding it right now. But what I, when his response is often, it's like I watch him energetically just have no, there's no part of him that hooks in with me.
Uh-huh.
He doesn't hook in. He's like, huh. And I'll be like, no, I need you to say, oh, so annoying. And he'll be like, but it doesn't seem annoying to me. And I'm like, oh, you son of a bitch. Then I have to sit with myself and go, if I had the perspective that everybody's on their path and every moment of every person's life is them doing the very best they can, which is my holy idea.
Yeah.
Then I would have no reaction to it either. It's pretty good. He's pretty good to have him around.
Yeah. Because he kind of is your holy idea.
That's right.
And he's a different type.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so he's fun because he and I both keep going back and forth about whether he's a 5 or a 9.
Mm.
And
yeah.
Yeah, he exhibits a lot of qualities of both. For me personally, I still come back to he's a very 5-y 9. I think he's a 9. But he thinks he's a 95.
Yeah. So I can see either one of those. I don't know him internally well enough, but just his energy reminds me actually of my dad. He is similar to my father.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Because to me, it's like the what do you call it? The, well, now I got to pull it up. Hold on. I just want to look at this one thing about the 9 on this page and then we'll stop talking about this. And it's 218. It's 218. It's my number.
It is.
Indolence, seeker of harmony, holy love. Don't neglect yourself or negate yourself for the sake of others, but discover your own path. I mean, that holy idea, he needs that reminder all the time.
Yep. That's a 9.
And that's the holy idea of the 9. Yeah.
Yeah.
And
Rami too.
And he gets caught in his laziness and his indolence and he becomes a seeker. Action is a great virtue for him and he always has to be reminded of it. And he's gotten better and better at reminding himself, okay, I don't want to, but take action. It's just, he's a fucking 9. I think he's a 9 that likes to do research.
This is great.
So he thinks he's a 5. I think it's also like the the attributes of the five are, from his family conditioning, more appealing. So he's in more judgment of the nine, so he doesn't want to be a nine.
Yeah.
That's my guess.
Yeah. We should return to, if we want to our where we veered off, which was you talking about Gene Key and you feeling safe in three, being seeing that the world is taking care of you. That's how this all started, but I really have to pee, so.
Okay, bye.
Hold that thought for-
I'll be here.
For 30 seconds.
I want you to take as much time as you need to urinate.
Your time is more valuable than my needs.
And he got it. Awakening.
What's up, Rami here. So yesterday was a beautiful, beautiful day. We're currently in previews. That means we rehearse during the day and we perform at night here in Malvern, Pennsylvania. And so between rehearsal and performance yesterday on that lovely day, me and three friends, they were two actors from the show and the lighting designer. The four of us went out and we harvested dandelions. We didn't bother with the roots because I didn't have the tools to process the roots. But we got leaves and flowers. There had been so many dandelions in this field. Unfortunately, a lot of them had gone to seed. We still got a fair amount, but if we had harvested a week or two earlier, we'd have gotten so many more. Anyway, we're walking in this field and there's this area that was just full of buttercups. And I was like, well, how do buttercups taste? And so I popped one in my mouth. It was delicious. They're like sweet. And then after you finish eating them, they're spicy. And I gave one to my fellow actor and she loved it. I had another one. I gave them to the other two, actor and lighting designer. They liked them. I had about five of them. But then like our tongues were burning. Anyway, we got back to the housing and I sauteed the dandelion greens with raisins and pine nuts because the greens are kind of bitter. So the raisins help with that. And then tossed it in like a balsamic and olive oil and a little bit of Dijon vinaigrette. But then we battered and fried the dandelion flowers. I got that off of YouTube. Apparently back in the day, oldie-timey Americans were frying dandelion flowers. And of course, some contemporary Americans also fry dandelion flowers. Anyway, they were delicious. So fun. So fun. Fried dandelion flowers. I did look it up and buttercups are poisonous. I had five. They had one each. It's fine. I was fine. But don't eat buttercups. The show last night was lit. The audience was on fire. They were laughing so much and so hard that we lost control of them. They were laughing. They were talking. It was like it was their party and we were just like, you know, some floor show entertainment or something. We just had to wait to say the next line. Was it the buttercups? Rami's rules.
Well, turns out that was one of the longest pees of my life. It's like you gave me permission and like every drop of urine that ever existed in my body came out.
1 second. Now I'm in the midst of sending a quick email.
I mean, if we leave this in, I think we can hear what an incredibly fast typer you are.
Oh my, thank you. I'll take the compliment.
It literally sounds like one of those sort of fake movie, like, oh, I'm the super fast typer.
I also heard yesterday I was doing something on a Zoom and somebody said, your microphone is very close to your keyboard. And I was like, I just have a Mac. I don't even know where the microphone is. And they were all PC people. And they were like, oh, see, we all have detached keyboards that are not connected to the computer. So if they type, it's not built into the laptop that they're going to hear it.
Right.
I hadn't even thought of that.
Well, you have your Yeti sitting on the desk, so it picks up every vibration. So every time you're typing, it's like boom, boom, boom,
yeah,
boom,
but
boom, boom, boom.
Yesterday, I didn't have the Yeti at all. I was just on the laptop.
Yeah.
So they weren't responding to the Yeti picking it up. They were hearing the laptop. There was only the laptop mic functioning. But I do wonder, where in the Mac is the microphone?
Oh, yeah. It's probably like right...
There aren't any little holes.
No, it would be like the teeniest little pinprick of a dot. I mean, it should be up here with the camera because then it'd be away from the keyboard. But maybe it's like along the front of the computer. No, because then your hand would rub against it every time you were typing.
There isn't one on the keyboard, I'm telling you. There's no hole. There's no holes.
Yeah.
Maybe it's on the back. Anyway.
Very subtle. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, so I think the final thing I just was getting at and wanting to name is that the Gene Keys is a fantastic set of tools for integration of high spiritual vibrational energy coming into the physical body. And that's cool. And like,
and this all started because you were late because you needed to finish a process.
Uh-huh.
And that process was a physical process.
Yeah, I just was holding the position. You hold this certain position with your hands and you sort of think of this specific idea and it activates a certain kind of healing. And it was, I just had like a tight thing going on in my heart that was connected up to the back of my neck. It was like a very normal Katie kind of healing that I go through with any kind of practice. But I was just right in the midst of like a really tight piece on the heart that was like, if I had stopped, it would have been a little annoying to find it again, and then I could do because you have to. It happens all the time, but
yeah.
Anyway, but really, what I'm trying to get to for the listener is that, I mean, because I do this shit all day, every day, is one other piece to say that will take me to the whole thing I'm trying to say, which is also the knowledge and the information that's inside of each gene key, like. Knowing that in my position of vocation, I have the 34 in the second line, like it's similar to human design in that there is detailed info in each gene key. A gene key is like a combination of a gate and a line.
Gotcha.
And so you'll have a gate 34.2, right, in the second line. So there's so much to read and internalize too, just on the mental plane. To understand each gene key in your full, they call it the holographic profile. And the holographic profile shows all your gene keys in succession. And again, like what I want to say is that when I first discovered the gene keys, I read two sentences from the first paragraph about one of my gene keys. And I went, I'm all set. And closed that book.
I have such an image of you just going, nope. Push away.
The feeling in my body very distinctly, it was like, something started to open in my belly. Like it was so true and the insights were so profound that an opening began that was like a profound threat to my entire sense of self at the time.
Wow.
And I wouldn't have made it. I couldn't have done it. I didn't do it. I couldn't do it.
Do you have a sense of what that concept was or that statement was? And would you be willing to share it?
Sure. Yeah. Let's see. I could pull it up. It was the 30... Let's look at it. Let me grab it. 1 second.
Okay.
What's funny about it too is now all I'm seeking is that opening that I get from,
right.
You know, but at the time it was like, don't open me there. Oh my God. I literally opened to it.
Get the fuck out
look
of here.
Look how big this book is.
Yeah.
I just went boomf.
God and I'm on damn it.
Fucking hell.
This world is serving itself up.
It really is the 30th gene key. Lightness, quintessence. Wow, I was just meditating on this. What the fuck is going on? All right, so, okay, I have to explain a couple things to make this make any sense. So in the gene keys, each gene key, which, God, what is my 30 in? Hold on, I'll pull it up just so this makes sense. Okay, right, 30 in the sixth line. Okay, so I have gate 30 in the sixth line in my life's work gene key. Okay, so of course, like back in the day, I was like, what is my life's work? And I opened this fucking huge ass book. Each gene key has three, what are they called? Aspects. There's the shadow aspect, the gift, and the city. The city, so the shadow is what you'll, like the what you'll struggle with and how it'll mess with you. The gift is what you work with to be creative in your life. And the city is like the sort of highest version of what the shadow gets transformed into. But Richard Rudd does talk about, we're not here to necessarily live in the city all the time. We live from the gift, and we try not to get bogged down by the shadow. And when we are, we transmute it through our meditative, contemplative processing work. So my shadow in my life's purpose gene key is desire. My gift is lightness, and the city is rapture or quintessence. And let's see, the title of the paragraph, it says, the 30th shadow, desire, nature's greatest con. Deep within the matrix of the DNA molecule lies a vital code that is greatly responsible for the building of our human civilization. I'll tell you how far I got before I close the thing. This is the 30th shadow of human desire. Often we think of desire, when we think of desire, we think first of sexual desire, which is in fact only one direction that desire could take. To understand this 30th shadow, we will have to strip desire down to its essence. And this means detaching the force of desire from its projection into the world. And I went, I'm out.
Interesting.
Because at that time, I mean, I'm obsessed with this now. And now I want to keep reading because there's so much juiciness in here. But anyway, at that time, desire was the only thing I had. It was like I was building an acting career based on desire.
Right.
You know, and it was like the whole engine of everything. So it was like page one, first four sentences, total threat to my entire reality.
Dismantle your engine.
No thanks. No can do. Yeah.
Wow.
And now I'm like, cool, let's fucking liberate ourselves from desire.
Yeah, because how that lands on me is very just kind of mental and like, oh, okay, that's a good baseline start for an idea. Let's explore that. Like, there's no threat in that to my...
As a pure phenomenon, desire is simply genetic hunger. It does have a deep connection to our physical need to eat, but desire alone is not responsible for our individual survival. This aspect of our genetics does not influence individuality at all. If anything, desire is far more likely to get us killed than protect us. However, desire does serve a far wider purpose when viewed at a collective genetic level. The real purpose of desire is to get human beings to make mistakes so that we can evolve. What? Let us clarify this statement. Desire does not serve the individual, but it does teach us something valuable at a collective level. The real hunger coming from this 30th shadow is the hunger for experience itself. In order for human beings to master their environment, they have to taste all aspects of it, which means that they also have to explore the darker side of experience as well as the lighter, which is literally what I've been doing my whole life. The fact that individuals or even large populations are killed in the process is of no consequence to the awareness operating through the whole human gene pool. Humans are expendable to the collective. Even whole races are expendable. But humanity itself is not expendable. We are programmed through the 30th gene key to learn and evolve through experience. So there's nothing we can avoid experiencing. So Katie had to move to Colorado, New York, Florida to come back. Experience. That's the 30th gene key. If there is anything that is still untried by humanity, then somewhere inside someone, the hunger of the 30th shadow will push them into trying it, no matter how outlandish or depraved it may be. So that's, I mean, I was literally just like living straight up from the shadow only and had, and in fact, when I saw lightness was the next step up, I was like, I am so far from being light anywhere. And I didn't believe in light because heaviness is what makes drama better.
Yeah.
And I was a drama person.
Yeah. Totally.
I wasn't into being light. I was like, all of this is terrible. No. But I knew in my guts that it was exactly what it was true.
Well, I mean, what's funny is like I often say to people when I'm describing like our podcast or things and who don't know you.
Yeah.
And they'll be like, oh, so she's like super woo-woo. And I know the image that they're going to start to work with. And I go, yeah. Well, it's actually, she's one of the few like super high woo-woo people that I trust because she's not airy-fairy, because she doesn't have a soft, breathy voice, because you are actually rather heavy.
Right. We're talking about two different kinds of heavy, but I know what you mean.
But still, like, just the concept of light, if you're looking at it from the point of view of what you were looking at it from 15 years ago.
Yeah.
Like we see it is like, get the fuck out of here with your light. Like, ugh.
Yeah.
And I have that same reaction. Like I don't trust at its core, just light energy of lightness.
Mm. Mm. I do.
I don't know if this is, yeah.
I do now.
Fuck, you just reminded me of a huge shift in my body. You know how we've been talking about, I don't want to make it about me, but it just reminded me of something.
Okay.
Lightness.
And then I do have to go, sadly.
Okay, so we'll go in a sec. Lightness has been an issue for me as well. Specifically, light touch.
Oh, I hear that.
Like, it drives me batty for years.
Yeah, same.
For years. I've also been trying to get more embodied, right?
Right.
I want to feel
right.
my body more.
Right.
Lightness used to make me panic.
Huh.
Light touch would make me tick. I'm very ticklish.
Uh-huh.
So it's akin to that. Without going into too much graphic detail, I had a full-on breakthrough on light touch recently.
Oh.
I love it. And it,
what happened?
I've forced myself to fucking deal.
Yeah.
To stop making, well, that's just me. I don't do that.
Yeah.
I don't like light touch.
Yeah.
But I had to really look at, like, what is it doing to me? It's making me go, ha, 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 ha. Okay, so that's armor.
Right.
That panic.
Right.
Is because I'm armoring against that panic.
Okay.
So I didn't feel safe with light touch. It's a weird flip. And I mean, I don't know exactly what happened, but all I know is I had a huge breakthrough through just sort of kind of, and it was through will, but it was a will of embodiment, yeah. Like for just saying, get in your body, feel feelings with your body. And in fact, here's one of them that usually makes you panic. And letting someone touch me softly.
Someone touched you lightly, and then you stayed with the discomfort you felt about it, and it transformed into not discomfort.
It transformed into absolute pleasure.
Okay, see, that's, everybody hear it. Cassidy also transforms energy. It's not just me, because that's him taking the lesson of stay with the uncomfortable thing until it becomes something else.
Yep.
Yeah, rock on.
And you just reminded me of that, talking about discomfort with lightness.
Rock on.
I know it's a different word. It's just the same word used in different ways, but they're still the same.
No, but I hear you. That's totally relevant. And it's funny thinking about it now, because all I want now is more and more. I just love the lightness now. But it doesn't mean that airy-fairy thing that we think it means.
Right.
But I used to hate the idea of lightness because all I had was my darkness motivating everything. So I was like, if I were light, I wouldn't be able to do what I'm doing. And I was so attached to doing what I was doing that wasn't okay.
Yeah.
So here we are.
Here we fucking.
That's a whole new world.
Are.
I fucking love you. Really good talk. I'm sorry to rush off.
You gotta go. Have a fucking great rest of your fucking day. Do your fucking, keep doing your fucking work. Light, dark, heavy, soft, whatever.
You too, bitch. Do your fucking work, bitch. Heavy, light, dark, work. Do your work, bitch. Bye, bye.
Doing it work.
Are you asking for all of the answers? Say what? All of the answers? Yeah, all the answers.
Hey, guys. Thanks for listening. We'd love to hear from you. Please email us with your questions so that we have questions to answer in the Akashic Records. Our email address is allanswerspod@gmail.com. That's allanswerspod@gmail.com. And if you'd like to find us on Facebook or Twitter, it's @allanswerspod. Thank you.
Mixed and edited by Desmond McNeese for We Mixed It, LLC. Go to whatsoundsawesome.com.
Fantastic.